Our sermonic scripture is John 8:31-32. John 8:31-32. These words are recorded. So Jesus said to the Jews who had believed him, "If you abide in my word, you are truly my disciples, and you will know the truth, and the truth will make you free." May we hear what the Spirit is saying to the church. Thanks be to God. Open our ears, our hearts, and our minds. For the time that is ours, I want to try to talk about we are still here. We are still here. I too sing America. I am the doctor brother. They send me to the kitchen to eat when company comes, but I laugh and I eat well and grow strong. Tomorrow I'll be at the table when company comes. Nobody dare say to me, "Eat in the kitchen then." Besides, they will see how beautiful I am and be ashamed. I, too, am America. When Langston Hughes penned this poem in 1925, he probably did not know that nearly 100 years later, the tomorrow he so poetically spoke of still would not have come for African Americans. Rather than seeing how beautiful Black America is and being ashamed, America is still treating us like second-class citizens, evidenced in everything from disparities in incarceration rates to education, hiring, medical health, and lending practices. Now understand something. I wasn't always keenly aware of this level of subjugation. Listen, like most Americans, as well as many Black Americans, I believe that America, despite her flaws, and what I call vestiges of racism, was primarily a land of opportunity where hard work and determination, pluck and luck, grit and grind paid off. In a real sense, I believe that if you wanted it bad enough in America, nobody could stop you but you. Your lack of initiative, your lack of drive, your obsession with all that is wrong and against you rather than all that is right and available to you. But somewhere along life's journey, facts collided with fiction. And as James Baldwin wrote to his nephew in Friday Next Time, "My dungeon shook and my chains fell off." In other words, James Baldwin experienced the ontological awakening that Jesus spoke of in John 8:32. "You shall know the truth, and the truth shall make you free." Listen, when reading John 8:32, I love to place it in conversation with Mujerista theologian Ada Maria Arsace Diaz, defined as conscientization. Listen, that moment of insight which creates a suspicion about oppression. Because come on now, until you are suspicious about why you're going through what you're going through, listen, you'll never be free. Somebody said, as I recently shared in a Facebook post, that if you see a fruit fish go belly up in the lake, you wonder what's wrong with the fish. But if you see hundreds of fish go belly up, you better be suspicious about what's wrong with the lake. And in the sordid lake of North America, listen, too many Black and brown bodies are going belly up. And it has been a long time that we took a look at the lake. In the text, Jesus talks about being in bondage to sin. And in America, we are in fact in bondage to America's original sin, which is slavery and racism. Listen, but not just slavery and racism, but heterosexism, genderism, transphobia, ableism, greed, global capitalism, religious fundamentalism, biblicism, political fanaticism, and a host of other poisonous ideas. Listen, white evangelicals have spent so much time being white that they never found the time to be evangelical. But I love what Jesus says in verse 31. Jesus says, "If you abide in my words, you are truly my disciples." And then he goes on to say, "And you will know the truth, and listen, the truth shall make you free." In other words, Jesus is said, if you obey me, listen, if you love like I love, if you show radical hospitality the way I show it, if you express welcome for the wanderer, justice for the poor, self-denial to the things of the world, then these are truly the practices that will make you free. The question is, what changed me? What jostled me from my slumber? What delivered me from the lies of American exceptionalism and the lies of the American dream? Allow me to illustrate it this way. One of my favorite movies of all time is the 1977 TV miniseries called Roots, which was based on Alex Haley's Pulitzer Prize winning book of the same title. Listen, I never forget when I was watching Roots recently. Listen, there's a scene that illustrates my own awakening. In the scene, Chicken George, who is the grandson of the patriarch of the family, Kunta Kinte, who was captured from West Africa, listen, he is a successful cockfighter. Restricted by the suffocating system of slavery, listen, he pours his heart and soul into the game of training roosters until he masters the art of cockfighting. As a result of his gift, listen, he travels with his enslaver Tom Moore all over the South to fight chickens. Well, in the scene I speak of, Chicken George is excited because he believes that his enslaver Tom Moore is going to allow him to purchase his family's freedom. Unfortunately, though, Chicken George mistakes Tom's fascination with his cockfighting skills for being his friend. So when he tells Tom Moore his plans to purchase his family's freedom, he is reminded in the cruelest and harshest way possible that he is only property in the sight of his enslaver. In an air of raw and dehumanizing contempt, Tom shoots down his plan. He says, "You're my property, George. You're my nigger. Can't you get that through your thick skull?" Angry and deflated, Chicken George responds, "Yes, sir. It got through that time." Listen, I was a lot like Chicken George. I was hopeful and exuberant and full of faith in this experiment called America. And like Chicken George, it took some encounters with white supremacy through reading and through my own personal confrontations before I can finally exclaim like Chicken George, "It got through that time." Listen, I'll never forget an experience I had when I was a columnist at the Atlanta Journal-Constitution in the mid-1990s. Listen, this was the bastion of liberalism, and if anybody should have understood racism, it should have been the writers and staff members of the Atlanta Journal-Constitution. I'll never forget this experience that occurred during one of our diversity training sessions. During the session in question, the trainer separated the white employees and the black employees and told both groups to go to the board and write everything, the negative and the positive, everything that you think about the other group. Listen, it was an exercise meant to get at the root of stereotypes. Again, we were told to write everything, the positive and the negative, about the other group. Well, when the black group got up to write on the board, listen, we wrote everything good and bad. Listen, we wrote things like racist. We wrote things like opportunistic, hierarchical, domineering, power hungry. But listen, we also wrote things like intelligent, innovative, smart, and intellectual. Then it was the white group's turn. They wrote things like slow, lazy, entitlement mentality, uncultured, athletic, musical, talented, and creative. But I was shocked by what they didn't write. Remember, this is the bastion of liberalism, and I was literally shocked that they didn't write things like intelligent, intellectual, or smart. Listen, I kid you not. I was crushed. In the words of Malcolm X, I felt bamboozled, led astray, run amok, hoodwinked, and took. And all I could say is, it got through that time. Again, rather than seeing how beautiful black Americans are and being ashamed, America is still treating us like second-class citizens. All one has to do is read Michelle Alexander's excellent book, The New Jim Crow, Mass Incarceration in the Age of Colorblindness, or an insightful article titled The Skin Color Paradox, and the American Racial Order, to see the impact of racism in the criminal justice system and how blacks are relegated to overall lower socioeconomic status, more entanglements with the criminal justice system, and a reduced chance of holding elective office. In fact, a well-circulated University of Chicago study published in recent years found that African Americans, listen, with black-sounding names, were less likely to get called back for job interviews. And even today, the majority of black kids, including those from upper middle class families, are experiencing downward mobility. At 20.8%, the black poverty rate is 2.5 times higher than the white poverty rate. In 2016, the net worth of white families at $171,000 was almost 10 times greater than that of the typical black household. And according to the Economic Policy Institute, between 2000 and 2018, the gap between black and white incomes grew worse at every level. And yet we have white folks storming the Capitol because they believe they are the true victims. And the reason that this can happen is because America has not taken the words of our text to heart. In America, white supremacy and the desire to maintain white hegemony is more important than the truth. Listen, all of the extremism coming out on the right, that school shootings are made up, that the election was stolen, that Antifa was responsible for the Capitol riots, that the QAnon conspiracy is true, that opposition to Donald Trump from the left is the same as opposition to Barack Obama from the right, that Fox News is real news, that mandating wearing a mask is an imposition on freedom. Listen, all of this is an assault on the truth and is meant to make America not be able to tell the difference between fact and fiction. Listen, it's an elaborate trick called gaslighting, a form of manipulation that seeks to sow seeds of doubt in a targeted individual or members of a group, hoping to make people question reality, perception, and their own sanity. Listen, in its persistent use of denial, misdirection, and contradiction, and lying, it is an attempt to destabilize our ability to recognize the truth. And unfortunately, in America, it's working. Listen, and one of the ways it works is that it forces people to say, well, since we have extremists on both sides, on the left and on the right, listen, why don't we just meet in the middle? Listen, the problem with that is two things. First of all, it's predicated on false equivalences. And second, the middle is where nothing ever changes. Listen, we don't need to stand in the nebulous middle. Listen, we need to stand firmly on the ground of truth. Listen, the tactics of white supremacy have gaslighted us so much that preaching about justice and standing up for justice and refusing to settle for the nebulous middle is being equated to engaging in divisive rhetoric. Listen, standing up for truth is not divisive. Listen, was Jesus being divisive when he said it's easier for a camel to go through an eye of a needle than it is for a rich man to get into heaven? Was Jesus being divisive when he said, depart from me, you workers of iniquity, because you have failed to do justice toward the least of these? Listen, was God being divisive when God said, I despise your religious festivals and your assemblies are a stench to me? Was God being divisive when God said, even though you bring burnt offerings and grain offerings, I will not accept them? Though you bring choice fellowship offerings, I will have no regard for them. Come on now. Was God being divisive when God said, I will not listen to the music of your harps, but let justice roll down like rivers and righteousness like a never failing stream? Come on now. Speaking truth is not divisive. Listen, there's no freedom without the truth. Listen, there's no love without truth. There's no justice without truth. There's no equal opportunity without truth. Listen, without truth, bigotry and racism and oppression and injustice will live on unscathed and unbothered. Can I tell you, in a time like this, listen, we need the truth. And the truth is, we can't let our mission be compromised. Listen, we can't reduce our radical vision to a reformist strategy. Listen, we can't concede our right to reparations. We can't settle for kind of gentler white supremacists. We can't settle for warmer cages. Listen, we can't settle for nicer races. We can't settle and scale down our dreams. Listen, we can't give up on our hopes. Malcolm X was right. If a man sticks a knife in your back 6 inches and pulls it out 3 inches, listen, that's not progress. I love the meme. It says slavery is white history, but how black people got over it is black history. Come on now, I love that. How we got over it is black history. In other words, we're still here. Listen, in November 2020, Kamala Harris was elected as the first woman and the first black vice president of these yet to be United States of America. Come on now, we are still here. In 2021, American executive Rosalind Brewer was hired as the CEO of Walgreens. We are still here. In 2020, Raphael Warnock was elected as the first black senator from Georgia. We are still here. In 2018, Stacey Abrams ran for governor and lost, but turned that defeat into a political machine that turned Georgia blue in 2020 and 2021. Listen, we are still here. Listen, there are tons of other examples that I could give you, but I don't have time. But the fact of the matter is, through it all, through slavery, through the Black Codes, the KKK, White Citizens Councils, Jim and Jane Crow, legal and de facto discrimination, and Trumpism, listen, we are still here. Still here, dreaming like Martin. Still here, fighting like Malcolm. Still here, imagining like Toni Morrison. Still here, resisting like Byatt Rustin. Still here, theologizing like James Cone and Katie G. Cannon. Still here, speaking truth to power like Ida B. Wells. Still here, building like Madam C.J. Walker. Still here, making music like Nina Simone. Still here, writing poetry like Gwendolyn Brooks. Listen, we are still here. Why? Because truth crusted earth shall rise again. Why? Because no lie can live forever. Why? Because truth forever on the scaffold, wrong forever on the throne. Yet the scaffold sways the future. And behind the dim unknown standeth God within the shadows, keeping watch above God's own. Listen, we are still here. Why? Because when we fight back, we win. Come on now, we are still here. No, not because of happenstance, not because of luck, not because of chance, but we are still here because of what my ancestors called the God of somehow. I think I said something. Anybody know about the God of somehow? Listen, when the world closes the door, God opens a window somehow. When life knocks you down, the God of love picks you up somehow. When the sea of life is raging, God protects you in the storm somehow. When life knocks the wind out of you, God gives you strength somehow. When the world writes a period behind your life, behind your oppression, behind the color of your skin, God sticks her finger in the period and extends a line and changes the period into a comma somehow. You know what a comma means, don't you? It means that it's not over. It means that God still has something else to say. It means that you still have another chance. Listen, God rewrites your future somehow. God lifts your head somehow. God fights your battle somehow. Listen, we're still here. So fight on. So march on. Keep on believing. Keep on fighting. Keep the faith, baby. We are still here. God bless you, and amen.